of United States against Palintzas.
Morning, Your Honor. Your Honor, essentially the appellant's argument, briefly a factual history. The parties, Frank and Joanna Palintzas, were married on August 18th of 1974.
Counsel, I'm worried about why we are here. What is this dispute doing in a criminal case?
Your Honor, the reason that the dispute is in a criminal case is because Ms. Palintzas intervened in the matter.
I don't think anybody can intervene in a criminal case.
Well,
seems to me almost impossible. Do you know of any authority for the proposition that somebody can intervene in criminal litigation?
Your Honor, the way that it was filed, and there's never been an objection noted by anybody in this party, and we proceeded forward on it, is that it was our position that since the restitution order was directed from the criminal court, and in fact we did have a right to respond in regard to the restitution as an intervener or as a party that was directly affected by the court's actions, that was the reason that the intervener action was filed in this particular matter.
You're not addressing my question. Do you know of any authority for the proposition that somebody who is not named as the defendant in an indictment can intervene in a criminal case?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of any direct authority to that effect.
I'm not aware of any indirect authority. I just wondered whether you knew something I did not.
I'm not suggesting that, Your Honor.
What's the current status of the divorce action?
Right now, there's a proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law in front of the trial court. One of the issues the trial court was waiting to see was what the determination was as far as this appeal was concerned.
Why isn't it part of the divorce action?
Well, as far as why it isn't part of the divorce action is the divorce court doesn't have any jurisdiction over the court's entry of restitution. There was a restitution order.
I think you're missing the point of both Judge Rovner's questions and mine. A restitution order is just a judgment. It's perfectly normal for Court A to enter a judgment, and then Court B will determine the effect of that judgment, where it ranks in priority with other debts, and so on. That's what happens in normal litigation. And the parties here seem to have the idea that restitution is somehow different, and I can't see why it's different. I mean, one might think this could get adjudicated in the divorce action. The United States could bring a debt collection suit under 1345. There are lots of ways to adjudicate this. I just don't see why it's in the criminal action.
Your Honor, my only response to that would be that that was the way it was addressed at the beginning of the proceedings. That was the way it was addressed as far as in front of Judge Miller. The government's never indicated any objection to it.
This is a question of the district court's jurisdiction. It has nothing to do with whether any parties object.
The garnishment apparently was a state law action?
No, the garnishment proceedings were filed through the district court. And the district court, in fact, has entered an order of garnishment. The assets have, in fact, been seized, and they're presently being held with the district court clerk's office.
Does that somehow supply jurisdiction?
Well, Your Honor, that's the way we proceeded in this matter, is the actions were filed through the district court, the garnishment orders were issued through the district court, the proceedings are being held through the district court. What the entire argument that was presented by the intervener in this case to the district court essentially was is that there had to be a determination made as to what Mrs. Palintzas' interests in the marital assets were and whether or not those assets were, in fact, subject to...
But you'd think that would be made, as Judge Rovner said, by the divorce court. Now, what do you say about the United States' assertion in its brief that jurisdiction is supplied by 28 U.S.C. 1367?
Well, that's a collection action that was utilized by the government, Your Honor.
That's not 1367. You know what 1367 is?
I do not, Your Honor.
Don't you think it would have been a good idea to find
out
when the United States relied on it for jurisdiction? Please proceed.
Your Honor, position of the intervener in this particular matter is basically that it is the, well, let me start off again. Essentially, once the divorce action was filed in March of 2005, according to Indiana statute, any and all property acquired by the parties prior to the date of the marriage, even prior or during the course of the marriage, becomes essentially a marital pot. Pursuant to In re Haynes, essentially this is considered to be a community property type situation or akin to community property.
But tell me this, is there any authority in Indiana for the proposition that the date of separation is legally relevant to determine property rights in marital assets?
The date of separation would be the date for valuation of assets, i.e., what are the stocks worth, i.e., what are the retirement instruments worth. It's the date of the, well, actually, the date of the separation doesn't have anything to do with what the marital pot is. Anything prior to the date of the filing of the divorce petition would be fair game for the court to make a determination as to what the marital assets are, whether the assets were acquired by husband, by wife, prior to marriage, or during the course of marriage, or from whatever source they may have came from. So the date of separation really isn't an issue as far as determining what the marital pot is. It's essentially anything that occurred prior to the filing of the dissolution petition.
Valuation is done from the date of the marital estate is done from the date of the filing of the divorce action.
Correct, but what our argument here is that the valuation date is not the significant date. What we're looking at was the actual assets that were acquired during the course of the marriage, not what
right.
they may have been worth on the date of the filing of the divorce
but
petition.
Indiana is not a community property state, as I understand it, and
it
the 50-50 presumption of a division of the assets in the marital estate upon divorce does not make Indiana a community property state. In other words, it does not affect the property rights during the marriage, which is when this restitution judgment was entered.
But
right?
That's correct. It is not a community property state. Essentially, the divorce action makes it akin to a community property state. But what the important thing about that statute is...
Those are two different things, though. You can't
me?
Make it akin to a community property state.
My
it either
answer
is
to your
or
question
it isn't.
Is it is not a community property state. However, upon the filing of the dissolution action, all assets of the parties are merged. And what the argument here is, and in the government's brief, they make the argument that there was no evidence introduced of direct financial contribution.
Right.
And essentially what the divorce court and what the divorce statutes in Indiana create is a recognition of the contribution of both parties, i.e. the presumptive 50-50 split, whether the contribution be financial, non-financial, something in like household services, et cetera, et cetera.
But is that why she didn't make any effort at all to show her contributions
well,
to
quite
these
frankly,
assets?
The financial contributions to the assets came through her husband, Frank Kalinsis. If you were to trace the direct checks and the direct financial contributions, they would have came through Mr. Kalinsis. However,
well,
the only way that is possible or what would also be recognized as a contribution of the wife, by her being able to do certain things, raising the children, et cetera, it frees up his assets for contribution, which is exactly what the divorce laws contemplate and exactly what the divorce laws protect in regard to both husband and wife. You don't have to show the direct financial contribution to the asset to make a claim to it. You basically, any and all contributions to the marriage, whether they be financial or not, are contributions considered by the divorce court in making a determination as to who deserves what portion of the assets or what assets belong to what party. Our argument here is that contribution is more than just straight financial, and that's exactly what's contemplated by the dissolution statute, and therefore that should be recognized by the court in making a disbursement or making a determination as to which party is entitled to which asset and to what degree.
Well, those issues of contribution to the marriage are issues for the state divorce court, and any assets that come into the marital estate are encumbered by whatever liens are in existence at the time of the filing of the divorce action, and in this case that includes the government's lien. So the value is diminished by the value of the lien, and then after the bottom line is reached by the divorce court, then the contributions to the marriage are weighed and evaluated. That's how the ordinary divorce action proceeds,
but
right?
But in response to that lien argument, the government itself submits that if we could show that Joanna Kalinsis in fact contributed X amount of assets directly from her checking account into this other account that was seized, they're not arguing that lien would still apply. Their contention is that therefore the lien wouldn't apply to those assets because ownership has been established. Our argument is in the dissolution action, the divorce court also has the authority to take into consideration other contributions like kind and make a determination as to whether she has any entitlement to those assets. If the lien applies, the lien would apply whether we prove she made direct financial contributions or other contributions under the divorce court. I think the government submits if we could show direct financial contributions that the lien would be defeated, but the lien's still there. So therefore, either the lien applies to everything or it doesn't. Our argument is we can show direct contribution through the divorce action, through the marriage itself, 32-year marriage, and therefore the divorce court does have the jurisdiction to make assessments as to what percentage of property should be provided to each spouse based upon arguments submitted before that court. Our whole argument here is it should be the divorce court that makes the determination as to whose property interests apply to who. And if, in fact, we can show direct...
That's your whole argument. You were the intervener in this case.
What do you mean? Why is that my whole argument?
You can't say it's your whole argument that the divorce court could show that when you were the one who intervened and asked the federal court to determine this.
The argument that was presented to the federal court was simply that the dissolution court, the divorce court, was in fact the appropriate party to make a determination as to the disposition of
assets. A very strange thing to do, to intervene in case A, to ask that the court not decide. In any event, I think we have your argument. Thank you very much, Mr. Kupsis. Ms. Johnson.
Sharon Johnson for the Assistant U.S. Attorney for the Northern District
of
Indiana.
What is this doing here?
Judge,
do you know of any authority for the propriety of intervention in a criminal case?
No, Your Honor. I believe that the only reason that the district court entertained this matter was because the defendant, the wife, obtained an ex parte restraining order on the garnishment.
That's fine, but that doesn't give courts any authority they otherwise lack. So you agree there's no authority for intervention in a criminal case. I certainly don't know of any.
Correct.
Your brief says that jurisdiction is supplied by 1367, the supplemental jurisdiction statute. And I must confess I don't understand that, because 1367 begins by saying, except as provided such and such, quote, in any civil action of which the district courts have original jurisdiction, close quote, and so on. This is not a civil action. 1367, by its own terms, is inapplicable. So what would be the basis for the district court's authority here?
Judge, again, the government's argument is that this would be based on enforcement of the garnishment. And that was the sole reason the district court had to make a decision on that.
It is pretty fundamental to the operation of the criminal justice system that district courts enter criminal judgments, but they don't supervise them or superintend them or do anything else. The judgments are enforced usually by the executive branch. If they're money judgments, they're enforced by separate litigation. I just simply don't understand what's going on here. You seem now to agree that you know of utterly no authority, no case authority, no statute.
That is correct. That is correct. And if I am able to obtain that authority, I would definitely supplement the record. But I believe that the reason the district court was entertaining this issue was because of the ex parte restraining order. And the garnishment proceedings were pending at the time that ex parte order was entered in divorce court.
Why didn't the United States file a separate suit under the Federal Debt Collection Procedures Act? There's a whole set of federal statutes specifying how the United States collects debts. Why not use it?
Well, I think the main reason that it was not used at that point was because we already had the pending garnishment of the defendant, the husband's assets. And that was why we were already in the midst of enforcing the judgment, and that we were looking for our orders to complete the writ or the garnishment of these assets.
Is that why your argument seems to be that after 30 years of marriage, she's entitled to nothing because she can't show her contributions? I mean, even if she didn't contribute salary or any other kind of earnings, Is there any likelihood that she would be entitled to nothing under state law? I mean, well, is that why that's your argument?
Well, I don't think that that's the government's position, that she's entitled to nothing. The things that, the assets that the wife is trying to stop the garnishment of were assets that did not meet any of the statutory exemptions. This was not their motor vehicle or their personal residence or any of those types of assets. Most of these were investments, retirement funds related to the husband's employment. So these were not assets that would have met one of the statutory exemptions or any of the other exemptions that would that are usually precluded under the Federal Debt Collection Act.
Remind me of the number, $25 million, what was it?
Yes, this is a huge judgment, $25.5 million. And the government submits that timing is really at what's at issue here. We received the judgment, the order of restitution in February of 2005. Then the garnishment is proceeding to enforce that restitution order. Then the defendant's wife filed for divorce.
Pursuant to what authority was the garnishment proceeding?
That was all under the Federal Debt Collection Act. That was based on our enforcement rights under statute. So we were proceeding with the garnishment of assets that we were aware of through the pre-sentence investigation, through the criminal investigation.
And that and was within the confines of the criminal case?
Yes.
Or pursuant to a separate complaint?
Within the criminal case, enforcement of the restitution order. That is correct. And the garnishments were tendered to the wife. She had an opportunity to answer to the district court. And I think that's why the district court makes note that she stated that she was not trying to stop this garnishment because of her own personal contributions. This was basically only because of the pending divorce matter. So again, the government submits that based on the timing of the order, we had the restitution order, then we were trying to enforce that restitution order, then the wife files for divorce, that the wife basically loses in this situation. The federal lien was first. Even in divorce court, she's going to have to be faced with the fact that her husband had this huge judgment against him. It's just like any other tax lien or mechanic lien or anything else that he would have encumbered their assets with when they were pending before the divorce. Based on the arguments that we made in our brief and the fact that the government's missed the timing is what precludes the state court from making any determination on this matter, we are asking that this court affirm the district court's order allowing the garnishments to proceed.
You're not asking us to just outright dismiss this case since we may not have jurisdiction? That's not what you're going to ask us to do here today?
Well, we are asking for that the order be affirmed based on the fact that the order allows us to proceed with our garnishment.
That's what you want. That's what you want. That's what the government wants here to do.
Well, I guess the government
is... It doesn't sound like the United States Department of Justice has considered the implications of the jurisdictional argument you are making here.
I believe that we may have been so focused at the time with the proceeding with the garnishment and wanting to finish that part of our enforcement. The government takes note now that the district court may not have had jurisdiction to... entertain this intervener's
appointment. Appropriate for the parties to file memos within 10 days addressing the question whether, first, intervention by a private party is proper in a criminal case, and second, whether if such intervention is proper, there's any basis of continuing jurisdiction in the district court to make further rulings about its judgment in a criminal case. It is my hope that the United States Attorney will check with the Department of Justice to see whether it is the Department of Justice's position that district judges have this kind of authority. This is not something that should be decided by accident.
Thank you, Your Honor.
10 days to both sides to file jurisdictional memos.
Thank you, Your Honor.
This is taken under advisement.
Thank you.